The tennis world giving us a lot of news over the last few days. Last week, it was the U.S. Open coming out and saying, we're a go. We're going to play on the same dates. No fans, of course. We expect that the French Open will follow that. And then the last few days, prominent players on tour testing positive for COVID-19, including Novak Djokovic, who has received a lot of heat, and with more on that and so many other stories going on in tennis right now. We're joined by ESPN's Patrick McEnroe, who the last time was on this show was under quarantine because he tested positive for COVID-19. So, Patrick, I'm hoping that you can tell us that you are doing better today than the last time you were on this show.
I'm doing a lot better now. Listen, could you just play a little riff of that AC/DC for me again? Because you got me fired up. I mean, give me a little more of that riff. Get your
Mark Mullen knows what Patrick McEnroe wants to hear. That's our technical director.
Come on, Mark. Let's go. Let me hear it.
Okay.
There we go.
There it is. Bringing it.
Was this your pre-match? Like, I know you didn't have maybe the headphones that today's players did, but is this what you were listening to?
One of the great concerts I ever saw at Madison Square Garden, AC/DC. And in fact, about 5 years ago, when we were still covering the French Open at ESPN, I went to the AC/DC show at the Stade de France, the big soccer stadium there, where they had the Olympics and so on. And I went with Brad Gilbert, Darren Cahill, all of us, and Chris Fowler. The four of us went. Cahill's a huge AC/DC fan. He's an Aussie. Mm-hmm. And tremendous. They're still killing it, these guys. And they're like in, late 60s, 70s. Angus was going nuts. So I appreciate the little AC/DC intro. Yes, I'm feeling a lot better, as you can tell, a lot stronger. You know, my COVID-19 experience wasn't terrible from a health standpoint. The symptoms I had were not too extreme. I still feel a little bit of, I'm not going to say discomfort, but I feel something's a little off when I try to take a deep breath. But otherwise, you know, I was pretty lucky, got through it pretty quickly, and I would expect these tennis players who are a lot younger and a lot fitter than I am will have no issues getting through it physically. Now, they're obviously having a few more issues off the court, including Novak Djokovic for putting that event together, which turned into just an absolute disaster.
It really was, Patrick, and it should have been easier to see that it was coming than apparently Novak Djokovic thought it through between the basketball games and the bars and the parties and the meet and greets and everything else. As tennis starts trying to go through the summer and get ready to play tournaments again, can there be lessons learned through Novak Djokovic and Dimitrov and Coric and all those other guys that were over there about what not to do if you want to try to take care of yourself and your sport?
Well, there better be. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, they're absolutely better because there's no other sport that's more conducive to coming back in this crazy time that we're in, this global pandemic, than tennis. Like, maybe golf, of course, you have social distancing, but even more so in tennis. So, I mean, it's the easiest sport to be able to do it from the sport standpoint, mm-hmm. actually playing the game, unlike hockey, basketball, football, obviously. So you've got to get your ducks lined up. I mean, you got to do the right thing. I've seen plenty of exhibition events in the last 6-8 weeks in Europe, even in the U.S. last year. Another one going on right now with some of the top female players in Charleston, South Carolina, doing it the right way, step by step, be extra cautious, extra careful, no, you know, ball kids, lines people. You've got a person in the chair. You can use the technology available. And then to top it all off, as you said, these guys are out like partying in a nightclub, you know, screaming and yelling with their shirts off. I mean, that was just horrendous. No, it's horrendous. So, yeah, I think Djokovic, of course, he deserves a big part of the blame. He's the number one guy. He puts the thing together. But I think who deserves a lot more blame is the local authority over there for allowing this to happen. I don't know how that could have possibly happened, but it did.
So, as you mentioned, Novak Djokovic is taking so much heat, and you know, you think of, you know, the fact that he's president of the Players Council, but also there's the legacy question and you know, the GOAT question and going after Roger's record. How do you see what has happened over the last couple of weeks and how he has viewed the coronavirus maybe being a black mark on his career when you look back at what he's accomplished in his body of work and what he was like both on and off the court?
Well, I don't think it should affect what he's done on the court. I mean, he's been remarkable. He's been the dominant player in the last few years. Obviously, he's on track, if we all get back to normal, to break the record of Roger Federer and pass Rafael Nadal. If you look at how well he's been doing and how he's been dominating in three of the four majors, or at least he's a favorite to win three of the four. So I put him in separate categories, what he does on the court. Look, I know Djokovic reasonably well. He means well. You know, he makes a mistake. This was a big mistake, obviously. But I think he was trying to do something positive for the game. He was trying to do, especially in that part of the world where he's a national hero. He's like Wayne Gretzky in Canada. Mm-hmm. If you go to Serbia and that part of the Balkans. So he was trying to do something positive to get things back. Again, he listened to I guess he listened to him. They didn't say much. The medical authorities, the health officials over there in Serbia, just let this happen. So I think you got to put some of the blame on him. But to be honest, I think you got to put more blame on the local politicians in the air. But so look, I think Djokovic he's in a tough spot for so many years because Federer is like a god all over the world. Nadal is seen as one of the great competitors of all time, if not of all time, in tennis and maybe any other sport. And they carry themselves with an ease. You know, they're different, but there's an ease about them. Djokovic has been, over the years, you know, sometimes a little bit forced, trying to be liked too much. And I think he means well, as I said, but there's a little roughness around the edges to him, and he's got some far out thoughts which haven't helped him, you know, over these last couple of months with, you know, his ideas about, you know, you can think, if you think beautiful thoughts, you can change water that's infected or something. I mean, it's like ridiculous stuff. And anti-vax, which is obviously much more controversial. So, you know, he's got some outlandish ideas, but in the end, I think he's trying to do the right thing in this event. But the short answer is, I don't think it's going to affect his legacy as a player. As a person, obviously it does, but I think if tennis is going to learn from this, hopefully the U.S. Open, you know, they seem to have done all the right things in preparing to possibly be able to pull off this U.S. Open this year with no fans. So let's hope this isn't something that's going to sidetrack that along the way to trying to have a U.S. Open that's competitive and the top players show up.
Listen, Tajik, we love the U.S. Open in many ways because of the fans. What makes it so special is because of the intimacy and the volume of the fans and the New York crowds and the late night matches and all those things we like. So how different will it be to play in those massive stadiums that are empty? Mm-hmm. And do you think all the players, I mean, we've heard some concerns, Simona Halep talked about maybe not wanting to come over, different players just expressing concerns about getting to the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. Do you think it will be fully attended by all healthy, top-ranked players? And how different will it be to play in empty stadiums?
Well, let me start with number one. It'll be a lot different, okay? It'll be a lot different because the vibe of even going to the Canadian Open, you know, that I've been to every year, which would be in Toronto or Montreal, men and women, is awesome event, incredibly well-attended. That's what makes, you know, a great tennis match even better, okay? It's a fan's reaction. I mean, that's in any sport, okay? So we're seeing soccer being played in Europe, you know, with empty stadiums. Maybe soccer's a little bit different because it's so big and there's so many players. But I think that it's going to be different, okay? But if you give me the option of having a U.S. Open with no fans, that we can try different things in broadcasting to make it a little bit more exciting, or no tennis at all, no U.S. Open, I'm going to pick the former. You know, let's give it a shot, considering the world we're living in. Now, is everybody going to show up? No, they're not, partly because of the issues we've had in this country, you know, with not being able to control it, and now parts of the country are having huge upticks in the virus and what's going on in California and Arizona and Texas, et cetera. So assuming New York can stay on the track it's on and appear to be heading in the right direction, let's hope that, you know, some of the things they put in place, the parameters to have the event, will loosen up a little bit. I mean, just as we're all experiencing, I'm teaching tennis at our tennis academy, our John McEnroe Tennis Academy. And the first couple of times I taught a lesson, it's one on a court. Next time we can maybe have two of them. You know, now we can have four in a court with a coach, and you do it the right way, you're smart, and the kids pick up on it really quickly. So again, tennis is a sport that we've got to figure out a way to do this, because we've got an opportunity to showcase the sport. The players are going to make their decision based on their comfort level and how they feel about coming over to the U.S. And based on some of the issues we've had in this country, you know, it wouldn't shock you to see them decide not to. but I hope that the majority of them do, and I think most of them will.
Joined by ESPN's Patrick McEnroe, and I'll ask you the question that I usually ask you when we're standing next to each other in person at the U.S. Open. How about the Canadians? What do you think? And maybe specifically Felix, Dennis, and Bianca. And I point those three out because of where they are in their careers, sort of the infancy of things, and how this pause in the season is going to affect the younger stars of the sport.
Well, I think actually it would help the younger stars, to be honest. I think it's the older players that have a little more difficulty coming back. Now, I'm generalizing. Obviously, we don't know, okay? But I'm just thinking, and you know, I saw Sophia Kenin play, and she looked like she was in, you know, beautiful form, like she won the Australian Open. She beat Ali Risk 1-1. So I think the younger players, you know, they're more eager. They're obviously probably playing. You know, if you've been on the tour 15 years, even Milos Raonic, who was playing at our academy when this thing first started, by the way, and he was great. Just FYI for you Canadians, with our academy kids, and he did a Zoom with me with all our kids. He was tremendous. Okay, so but I think for guys like that that have been around a little bit longer, you know, maybe a little more difficult to try to kind of get yourself going, get yourself together. I think for the younger guys there and gals, obviously in Bianca, they're still, you know, this is all new to them and so relatively new. So I think it wouldn't affect them that much at all. Obviously, you've got some tremendous talent in Felix and Dennis. And, you know, we're waiting. We've been waiting in the tennis world for something really big from them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hasn't quite happened yet in a major, but both of them you feel are on the cusp. And obviously, we know what Bianca did last week.
Yeah, exactly right. Bianca, I think sky's the limit for her. I think everyone would see her game and say, you know what? She could be the best player in the world. She's shown that ability. She's shown that in big moments against the biggest players. So that's her. If you had to say between Shapovalov and Oje Aliassim, who of those two guys would you pick to have a higher ceiling in their game?
That's a great question. That's a tough one. I mean, because I think they're both tremendous talents. I mean, Dennis is a little more of a shot maker. He's a little more, he's a little flashier. Felix is a little more, I would say has a little more stability to it. I mean, they're both tremendous athletes. Felix is a little bit bigger. A little stronger, I would say, physically. I always like to refer to, you know, Dennis as sort of a wild stallion. You know, he's got this amazing right. ability, and he's just trying to kind of reel him in a little bit. Felix, I think, could use a little bit more of that. You know, sometimes he's maybe a little bit too predictable. So, but this is tennis. I mean, this is what makes it interesting. You're always kind of lacking one thing. They're both great, great talents, great young kids. They seem a great work ethic from both of them. If you put it on the line for me, I would probably go with Felix just because I think he's a little more disciplined in the way he plays. His natural game is a little more disciplined. But Dennis is more, you know, exciting, I think, to watch. He's a shot maker, but right. I'm not sure if that's going to, in the long run, going to be as consistent.
Well, your brother has said that he sees some similarities between himself and Shapovalov, which is quite the compliment.
Well, they're lefties, so that helps. And, you know, we had Dennis on the Laver Cup team, which was great. And John loved, you know, spending time with him. And he's got, again, he's sort of a swashbuckler. But the thing about the people really don't realize about my brother when he was at the top of his game was he was pretty methodical. I mean, he had unbelievable hands and ability to come to the net. But he wasn't a guy that took a lot of risk, unnecessary risk. And sometimes with Dennis, you see him do that. So I think John sees someone that's got all this ability. And he's like, hey, if this guy could just reel it in just a little bit, he could be, you know, top five, you know, maybe even higher player. So I think that's what John sees in him is that leftiness, that ability to create great shots. If he had a little bit more of that organization to his game that my brother John had, then I think this guy's the limit for him.
Do you think this year, Patrick, would be the year where you know, the big three won't be there because Roger's hurt. He's not playing again this year. But as they go through the fall and the big tournaments, do you think it's going to be Novak and Rafa again? Or will we see finally, whether it's Vera breaking through or one of the Canadians?
It's like an age-old question now.
Whoever. Like, yeah, is this the time? Are they finally going to age out? At some point, it's got to happen.
It's going to happen. I mean, it would be nice if we had a full year of tennis. I mean, look, I got to be honest. There's no way to answer that right now. There's just no way to know. Nadal seems like he's almost given up sort of mentally on this year. So that would be, and I'd be interested to hear what he's thinking now with the U.S. Open now. So we haven't heard from him. Obviously, he'll be looking at the French as well and, you know, the clay court tournaments right before right after the U.S. Open and leading up to the French Open. So I think he's probably trying to assess, well, do I want to go to New York? Do I want to deal with this? Do I want to give it a shot? It's impossible to know, guys. I mean, obviously, team has had a great run these last 12 months. French Open final, had Djokovic on the ropes in the Australian final. I mean, these young guys are exciting. Tsitsipas is fun to watch. Medvedev is a character. Zverev is, you know, sort of like, what's he going to do? So you've got guys that are certainly on the cusp. But like you said, we've been asking this question a while. So far, the answer has been, it's been all the big three.
Patrick, it's great just talking about the idea of tennis returning on tour, but it's even better talking to you and hearing that you're healthy and you're feeling good and you're coaching at the academy. So it's...
And Patrick, just for the record, I'm still trying to put into place the plan you gave me 5 years ago when we hit together up here in Toronto. We're at the Granite Club. I mean, you were our guest instructor for a few hours, and you put us through the paces. It was great.
Listen, I mean, you know, you guys, you got some athletic ability there. So, you know, tennis is not easy. You know, I'm doing this podcast, by the way. You guys should check it out, Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe, where I'd like to talk to you, get you on my podcast, because I like to talk to people that are very successful in something else, and then they pick up tennis. And because, to me, I find that interesting, because tennis is a hard game to get really good at. You know, you got to learn a lot of different skills. So I appreciate those comments, and I'm having a lot of fun being on the court teaching. I'm teaching kids, I'm teaching adults, beginners, whatever. It's a lot of fun because tennis is a sport that people enjoy throughout their life and at any age and at all levels.
Let's book it. Mike Johnson with Patrick McEnroe. I'll listen to that.
teach me a slapper and I'll teach you for him.
There you go.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Patrick, thanks so much for coming on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks so much.
There's Patrick McEnroe, ESPN's tennis analyst, and we should be seeing and hearing him at the U.S. Open later this summer, kind of knock on wood there, but one of the best in the broadcast business and doing a lot of great work at the Academy, John McEnroe's Academy, which isn't far, actually, from the U.S. Open and where Milos Raonic often practices during the U.S. Open. A little tidbit there.
Yeah, I mean, and those guys are involved in so many different facets. Yeah. He talked about... Well, they're Laver Cup. They're involved in Davis Cup. They're involved in the broadcasting. They have their academy, McEnroe brothers. They from top to bottom in U.S. tennis, they are right in the middle of it.